It's another edition of Pittsburgh Pop with Tim Benz and Rob Owen. It's your weekly slice of pop culture. Glad that you're with us. Rob, checking in after a weekend that featured a trip to go see the Barbie movie, which I was supposed to see. I was supposed to see that in Oppenheimer.
You were doing the Barbenheimer thing. You were
The plans were to see Barbenheimer, Barbie first. No, take that back. Oppenheimer first, then Barbie after that, because you wouldn't have to think as hard for the second half of that.
You'd be surprised. That was.
Oh, really? Okay. All right. Well, the plan was to do that. And then my plans got scuttled, unfortunately. But you are here to guide us through the big pop culture talking point of the weekend, which was the release of both movies. You've seen Barbie. What did you think? And what'd you mean by that comment there? Is there a little bit more meat on the bone than what is being perceived?
There is a lot of meat on the bone. Yes. So Barbie is a lot of fun, but also I did not expect to think as much as I did seeing a movie based on a toy. Like, I literally would really like to see a script, because there is one monologue in particular that America Ferrara has that, like, I would like to be able to read it. And it is not often that a movie makes me want to go back and read a portion of the script because it was kind of thought-provoking. It's such an interesting film, Tim, because you don't expect a movie based on a toy to, first of all, be so subversive. I mean, the stuff that they do that Mattel let them get away with is shocking to me, because it, you know, it is both an ode to Barbie and also a little bit of a takedown of Barbie. It addresses the feminist backlash to Barbie. It also puts Barbie in the context of sort of the real world and women's struggles for equality. It's a really fascinating film, and yet it is also wildly entertaining and funny. It was more than what I was expecting. Let's put it that way.
You said something similar when it came to dialogue, as I recall, about the most recent Star Wars that came out with
Andor. Yeah, Andor had some great dialogue too. You're right. This is even more than that, though, because the Andor dialogue was great in a Shakespearean fashion. This isn't so much. It's not so much about the style of the writing as it is what the writing is saying, and it just warrants further examination, because it's America Ferrara sort of talking about women in society, and women have to be like this on the one hand, but then they can't be like this on the other hand. It's really a very interesting monologue that, like I say, I would love to get into. And the thing that I'm really fascinated by is looking at the box office for this, Tim, because, you know, we have had a lot of bombs this summer. I saw Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, which I liked okay. It was too long, but I liked the way it ended. I saw The Flash, again, way too long. There was a good 90-minute movie in that two-and-a-half-hour movie, whatever it was. And so we've had a lot of bombs of sequels, of nostalgia trips. And yet this weekend we have Barbie, which, yes, it's based on intellectual property, based on a toy, but in a fresh way, that is the biggest opening of not just the summer, but the year. Latest figures have it earning $164 million in its first weekend in release. That's above the $155 million estimate from Sunday. And then Oppenheimer, which, let's get into how Oppenheimer ended up opposite Barbie, okay? Mm-hmm. So Chris Nolan, the director of Oppenheimer, always goes on this week of the year. This is always when he releases his films. And in the past, historically, he's made movies for Warner Brothers. When Warner Brothers put their movies day and date on HBO Max, he got mad, left Warner Brothers, went to Universal, set up Oppenheimer at Universal, staked out this weekend, and then Warner Brothers put Barbie on this weekend to compete with them. And never in my wildest dreams would I have guessed that this Barbenheimer phenomenon, which is totally an internet made up thing. It's not like the marketing did this. I mean, they would love to have come up with this in marketing, but they didn't. It was a natural groundswell that happened, and it powered Oppenheimer to 82.4 million over the weekend, which is way over. I think the tracking was like 50 million or something. So
in a weird way, trying to get back at Chris Nolan actually helped the Christopher Nolan movie.
It helped Chris Nolan, but I also think it helped Barbie, because Barbie was tracking at under 100 million and ended up making way over 150 million. So it is interesting that you have these two films, both well reviewed, that somehow ended up complementing one another and drove more people back to the theaters, even higher than the weekend that Super Mario Brothers opened earlier this year, which had been the biggest opening of the year to this point. So it is interesting. I don't know what the lessons are to take away. I think part of it is the audience is craving fresh things, and yet there are fresh things out there that nobody's going to see. Nobody's going to see Joyride. Yeah, so I'm not 100% sure what the lesson is. I think, I don't know, good marketing is part of it. Obviously, the marketing for Barbie was excellent. The marketing for Oppenheimer is excellent, too. But it ended up being 2 plus 2 equals 5, not 2 plus 2 equals 4. Somehow.
Well, I bet you, and this is just a hunch that I've got, that some of the cotton candy popcorn element of Barbie ended up being a benefit to Oppenheimer because of the Barbenheimer stuff. That there is a group of people who might be on social media that were all about Barbie that I don't think otherwise would have done the Oppenheimer movie, but because everybody was doing it, okay, let's do it too.
Right.
I do think there are more people who would want to see Oppenheimer that would have taken in Barbie as well for both the cinematic element and the popcorn element. Like I do think you're more likely to find a person who wants to challenge themselves as an audience member in film that will take in cotton candy than cotton candy wants to be challenged. That's my theory.
I think that's part of it, but there's also a small percentage. I saw data somewhere that said 5% of the people who went to Oppenheimer this weekend did so because they could not get tickets to Barbie because it was sold out. I know the show I was at was sold out. So,
oh, okay.
So I think there's a lot of different things at play here, and it will be interesting to see what lesson Hollywood takes away from this weekend, if any. But, you know, there has not been a weekend this successful at the American box office since April 2019, when Avengers Endgame opened.
And Indiana Jones, you said, was okay. It ended well, but you didn't. And how about Flash, too? Let's get some reviews there. You said you liked the Indiana Jones ending, but you weren't wild about the rest of the movie, or just the length, or what?
Yeah, so there were things I very much liked about Indiana Jones. You know, one of the things I had been concerned about going in is that at the end of the fourth one, Indiana Jones and Marion Ravenswood got together finally. And that was something that, as a fan who loved the first movie, I was glad to see Marion back. And I was a little worried about how this film would erase what happened in the fourth movie. But by the end of this final film, I was satisfied with how it dealt with that. So that was what I liked. Also, there's a really crazy twist in the third act that I also liked, but I could see where people would not go with it. But I completely went with it, and I liked it, and thought it was a good unexpected twist that I didn't really see coming until it was there in front of me. Having said that, though, there's just too many chase scenes. You know, the whole 20-30 minute beginning where it's CGI younger Harrison Ford is really good to a point, and then it's like, okay, there's a fight on top of a train, we've seen this a million times, we don't need to see this again.
Yeah, self-reflexive for the sake of being self-reflexive at that point.
Yeah, and there was just, you know, it felt like there was at least one chase scene too many, or the chase scenes went on a little too long here and there. I really liked Phoebe Waller-Bridge as Helena, his goddaughter. I don't think it is a bad Indiana Jones movie, but I think it could have been better if it were like 30 minutes shorter. And The Flash, again, I would say the same thing. There's all these superhero movies always have this giant CGI conflagration battle at the end. And it's so mind-numbing to me because it's so overdone. So we've seen it so many times before, and it tends to be boring and honestly sometimes hard to follow if the effects are not super crisp. And I really thought, you know, troubles aside, Ezra Miller made a great Flash. I liked the humor. Michael Keaton was great. It was fantastic to see him again as Batman. There are also some other clever twists in the film particularly at the end. But given that it's a huge bomb, those will never get that. The final twist will never get paid off. But again, it was 2 hours and I think 20 minutes, 30 minutes, something like that. It should have been 105 minutes and it would have been a much, much better movie.
All right, Rob, let's get to some local stuff now. A couple of topics worth talking about. What's the latest on AT&T Sportsnet Pittsburgh and their future broadcasting games here in town? And what's the latest on WPCW-TV? Are they changing the call letters?
They are, and I sort of expected that that would happen. So we'll start with WPCW. That is currently Pittsburgh's CW affiliate. That affiliation is going away after August 31st. They are going to be an independent station, independent to a degree. And the new call letters that they have filed a request with the FCC for sort of give you some idea of maybe what it's going to be. And I had read in a trade publication that all the CBS-owned stations that are dumping the CW, I think there's about eight of them, are going to become more promotional platforms for Paramount Plus to a degree. Now, we also know that WPCW has picked up some college and football games. We talked about that last week, I think. But the call letters that they have applied to the FCC for and are waiting approval on are WPKD. So presumably the P is for Paramount, the key KD would be for KDKA. So I can imagine them using it as a promotional platform for Paramount Plus, given those call letters. So we'll see. Then AT&T Sportsnet. Yeah, so I had fielded a question in last week's TV Q&A about that. You know, we reported back in February that Warner Brothers Discovery wants to get out of the regional sports business. They own AT&T Sportsnet. That remains the case. They are trying, I think, to be thoughtful about it and not just cut it off and deprive viewers of access to Pirates and Penguins games. But there is going to be a change in ownership. Now, the question is, how is that going to look? One thing that you and I talked about before, the fact that Fenway Sports Group owns the Penguins. They also own the New England Sports Network. You could see them moving the Penguins to there. But then they have to come up with, they have to get carriage for that channel in the Pittsburgh market on Comcast and Verizon and DirecTV and all that stuff. So the easier thing to do would be if the Pirates simply took ownership, if either the Penguins or the Pirates took ownership of AT&T Sportsnet. What I have heard is that the Penguins are better situated to potentially do that. And so then they would take over AT&T Sportsnet and perhaps bring in the Pirates as a secondary partner. But again, this is all not completely determined, but something that is at work at this time.
Yeah, and it was something that was talked about 6 years ago, something like that, 7 years ago, maybe, I don't know, maybe five. When Ron Burkle and Mary Lemieux were rumored to be interested in buying the Pirates for this express purpose, which would be to create their own sports network. I mean, this is not the first time this theory has been talked about. It's just a little bit more streamlined now that Fenway Sports Group is involved because they've got Nesson and they've done it before. But the thinking was to apply a Nesson logic to what the Penguins might do. And I don't know how much or how little truth there ever was to Burkle and Lemieux being interested in trying to buy the Pirates from Bob Nutting. But the goal allegedly would have been to create a situation like the one we're describing right now.
Right. So it may just be that this happens without the same ownership owning both teams.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I suspect that we'll have greater clarity on that in the next.
And by the way, it's not like Fenway owns the Bruins. Rob, they're talking about this on a national level. I don't know if you saw that story, but apparently ESPN has been talking to the NBA, Major League Baseball, and the NFL at least. I'm not sure if the NHL has been in conversations with them. I want to say maybe MLS was too. There was a fourth league. Maybe it was the NHL, but they are going to their major sports partners, talking to them allegedly about becoming ownership partners, to coming in to be part owners, you know, with their shifting economics, as if that really needs to be streamlined more than what it is with what they're paying for rights and so forth and how much control the sports teams seem to have over the programming and the tone of broadcast. Right. But that would be a macro version of what we're talking about here in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
The secondary partnerships.
Yes. So I think that that's all sort of file under TBD. But I think obviously, when do the Penguins start their new season? Is it October-ish.
Camp will start, well, the preseason games for their purposes will start in very late September.
Okay. So, yeah. So I suspect
early
within
October,
the next month,
yeah,
we will have greater clarity on what's going to happen, at least when it comes to the Penguins. Or, I'm sorry, to the, yeah, the Penguins. The Pirates might have to wait since their new season won't start till spring, but I think Penguins will get clarity pretty soon.
All right, a couple of TV items here, not related to sports, before we go. Shark Week.
Yeah,
and
so you're
special
celebrating?
Yeah, I actually have seen an episode or two. It's one of those that it's a lot easier to keep it on in the background than it is some other shows. You know, you can just have it on the background and find yourself standing there with your empty cup of soda or beer or whatever that you were going to go up to get, and now you're just standing there in front of the television watching the sea lion get eaten. Yes, that's how Shark Week works for me.
Did you happen to see Belly of the Beast, where the one where the guy is in a dead whale, a fake dead whale carcass, and like there's a bubble underneath the carcass under the water, so he's in it in scuba gear filming the sharks as they swarm, and he's got little controls so he can release chum from the whale carcass to draw the sharks in?
No, I didn't see that. The last one I saw was the one I was coming back from New York when we stayed at our motel, and it was when the orcas ate the shark. The orcas turned against the shark.
Yes, so that's going ongoing all this week on Discovery Channel and also on Max. So there's a lot of new programming. They, of course, repeat some shows from the past, but Belly of the Beast was the one that I wrote about Friday that was on Sunday night. I'm
the
sure
other one was Special Ops Lioness. Actually, their teasers got me interested in this one.
Yeah, so this is a Paramount Plus series, Special Ops Lioness. It started yesterday, Sunday, on Paramount Plus, and it stars Zoe Saldana as... I think she's a Marine. She's working with the CIA basically and sending in somebody undercover with to spy on state-sponsored terrorists and then eventually target them. And the first episode begins with this huge operation that goes awry. She loses her asset. And then we get a flashback to the woman who will become the future asset and sort of detail how she came to be in the military. She's running from an abusive boyfriend and literally runs into a Marine recruiting office, which is how she ends up in the Marines. It's another Taylor Sheridan show. I think if you like SEAL Team, which is a show on Paramount Plus, this is sort of a distaff from a woman's point of view take on SEAL Team. It's not as thoughtful as a lot of premium cable shows would be, but it's not bad. The special effects are great. Nicole Kidman is a series regular as Zoe Saldana's boss. There's a bunch of other supporting actors who I rather like who are in it as well. So you could certainly do worse. The other thing I liked about it compared to a lot of Taylor Sheridan shows, like 1923, beautiful, Harrison Ford, Helen Mirren, great, but the story moved like molasses. It was so slow and so dull. And I appreciate that Special Ops Lioness, for the most part, moves at a good clip, which is I'm thankful for, because I could not deal with another Taylor Sheridan slow moving show. One other thing about it, Taylor Sheridan also does Filmed in Pittsburgh, Mayor of Kingstown. The opening credits of Lioness, both visually and the audio, the music, very reminiscent of Mayor of Kingstown. But I think this show can attract a broader audience. I think Mayor of Kingstown, by virtue of the amount of violence in it and also how murky and labyrinthine the plots are, is a little more daunting to get into, whereas Special Ops Lioness is pretty straightforward.
By the way, this whole time, have you been wearing an original beef shirt from
Burf.
The Bear?
It's a collector's item, Tim. The original Burf. That's a joke from season two. You may not have gotten that far yet.
No, I'm not that far in. I'm only four episodes in, so I'm midway through the first season. I'm trying to convince myself to keep going and get through season one and see what season two is all about. I'm not yet invested in this TV show. It's leaving me a little bit flat as opposed to others. I don't care about the characters yet.
Okay. I really like the character that really got me, I think, hooked was the the sous chef. Oh gosh, what's her name? Sydney. She was the one who I found most compelling and likable and drew me into the story. I did not watch The Bear when it first came on. I sort of binged it later because I knew I was going to need to write about season two because one of the actors has Pittsburgh ties. But I really came to appreciate it, and even more so in season two because the character development gets even better in season two. But yeah, my shirt is a joke from, I think, the second season premiere.
All right, what do we have coming up in TV talk and TV Q&A this week? Did an
Super.
anchor shave his mustache? Did an anchor take a vacation? Did a weatherman change roles with Channel 11 or Channel 4? I mean, like this is usually.
No, the TV stations have actually been pretty stable this summer. There hasn't been a whole lot of movement going around. Now, of course, watch, I say that, and there's going to be a sudden deluge of changes. But no, in TV Q&A, we've got somebody wondering, it's been 7 months since Dish Network dropped WPXI. Is that ever going to change? Short answer, probably not. If I was out of contract, I would switch if I were you. And then in TV talk, a new series coming to Peacock, Twisted Metal, which is based on an old PlayStation game, stars Anthony Mackie from Falcon and the Winter Soldier, and it's kind of fun. It's post-apocalyptic race car racing drama, but with a sense of humor, which too many post-apocalyptic dramas do not have.
Robbie made it through this whole thing without talking about Miranda Lambert and selfies during concerts. I think that's a good job by us.
I'm not part of that discourse at all, so I have nothing to say.
As far as Breakfast Benz goes, we will be up at training camp for the vast majority of the end of this week. So make sure you check us out there as we start our coverage of Steelers training camp 2023 at St. Vincent College. This is Pittsburgh Pop, and this is Trib Live.